Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayen. Nasta Prayeshwa Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Before we start, I wanted to just review Friday's class a bit. You remember Krishna Sharanam Prabhu gave a very nice commentary on the pastime of Krishna stealing the gopis' garments. And I wanted to explain that in order to finish the entire 10th canto in the fairly short time we have to move rather quickly. And that's why each of the chapters in this book comprise, on average, 3 chapters from the Krishna book. And then some days we have to do 2 of these chapters, which means 5 or 6 chapters from the Krishna book. And that will allow us to finish by April 20th. So that's the goal. Is it too fast? Are you digesting all of this adequately? Is there any comments? I see. That happens only 2 or 3 times, and they're shorter chapters. But you can handle 1 chapter, that's it. Okay, so how about our summary presentations? How are those going? What was that like for you, Derek, giving that? Right. There's a lot of latitude, just so you know, if you are... It's like, Zach, you have one coming up on Wednesday, right? So... You can so you can take any direction you want with it. There's no formula. Pardon me? You want to test everybody? Oh, that's smart. That is really smart. Okay, so this morning we're going to read about this, one of the most well-known of Krishna's pastimes, the Govardhan Leela. And Vaibhav Prabhu, by the way, is recording these, and if you miss any of the classes and would like to hear, they're on agodwhodances.com. /agodwhodances.com. Okay. Chapter 9, Indra and Varuna. A shift in sacrifice. Lord Krishna saw the cowherd men preparing sacrifice to offer for Lord Indra, honored king of paradise. Although the Lord knows everything, he very humbly asked King Nanda why the cowherd men worked hard at such a task. Dear father, kindly stop a moment. Tell your loving son the purpose of your effort and for whom it's being done. A saint like you will never lie, embellish, or pretend. He speaks straightforward, simple truth to enemy or friend. But even if you keep the truth from someone you don't trust, to keep it from your allies or your son would be unjust. While following tradition, doing what's been done before, some people practice rituals but don't know what they're for. Is yours a common ceremony held with wives and friends, or is it something sacred which the scriptures recommend? We're serving Indra, Nanda beamed. It's simply protocol. The clouds, his representatives, give sustenance to all. So people offer sacrifice like this with ghee and grain, the products Indra gives us through the agency of rain. The remnants of the sacrifice, which Indra then dispenses, allow mankind to prosper, be upright, and please the senses. Tradition says this sacrifice gives joy to heaven's master. Neglecting it is selfish and would bring us to disaster. Lord Krishna, knowing everything, including Indra's pride, and how to please his family and friends, at once replied, my father. It is karma by which one is born and dies. From karma all our happiness, distress, or fear arise. If we're rewarded for our work by higher deities, then first of all the gods need us and our activities. It's karma that determines whether we shall sink or swim. Lord Indra can do nothing. Why should people worship him? We all have our own natures, which determine what we do, and work, in turn, determines the results that we accrue. Our karma creates bodies, good or bad, as our reward. So karma is, in fact, our friend, our enemy, our Lord. Good work creates good karma, with prosperity and health. Instead of Indra worship, let us worship work itself. If one influence rules our lives, but we revere another, are we not like a faithless wife attending to her lover? The Brahmins work at teaching, and the Kshatriyas defend. The Shudras serve all others, and the Vaishyas farm and lend. Since we, as Vaishyas, keep and milk the cows for livelihood, the object of our rightful worship must be understood. Of course we need the rain, but is it Indra who supplies? The clouds produce the rainfall that comes freely from the skies. The mode of passion fills the world with full variety, including clouds that squander rain on desert, rocks, and sea. We live on hills with forests, not municipalities. The hills provide our water, food, and all necessities. Why waste your lovely offerings on unseen figureheads when you could bring them to a hill like Govardhan instead? Make cool, delicious sweet rice and hot soups of salty taste. Make fancy cakes, both baked and fried. Let nothing go to waste. Assemble Brahmins qualified to light the sacred fire and feed and offer cows and gifts to them as they desire. Give food to lowly dog-eaters, the dogs, and all who come. Give fodder to the cows and then embellish everyone with ornaments and sandal paste and festive silk attire. Then circumambulate the hill that fills our heart's desires. You now know my idea, Father. Take it, if you please, for such a sacrifice will satisfy the cows and priests. Drop Indra from your sacrifice for now, for if you do, the hill of Govardhan itself will share its wealth with you. When Nanda and the cowherd men took in Lord Krishna's words, they all appreciated and accepted what they heard. Because of their pure love for him, the cowherd men complied with Krishna's timely plan to reprimand King Indra's pride. The cowherd men, proceeding as Lord Krishna had advised, prepared to worship Govardhan with all of their supplies. The Brahmins chanted mantras as the cows were fed, and then they danced around that charming hill again and yet again. The lovely cowherd women, wearing rings and ankle bells, climbed into oxen-driven carts and rode around the hill. Their songs of Krishna's pastimes mingled with the Brahmins' prayers. Then Krishna, pleased with all of this, smiled broadly and declared, "The hill you know as Govardhan is actually me." With that, the hill exhibited its personality and started to consume great pots of sabji, dal, and rice prepared by Nanda's subjects for the Indra sacrifice. The people bowed before the hill, and Krishna did as well, although he was, essentially, prostrating to himself. "Just see," the Lord proclaimed, "how Govardhan has now agreed to come and shower blessings on our whole community. Since he can take the form of snakes and other deadly shapes, to fail to worship Govardhan would be a grave mistake." Festivities completed, all the citizens felt blessed and went back to Vrindavan with Lord Krishna and took rest. Indra attacks. When he saw Nanda rearrange the honors meant for him, Lord Indra grew as angry as a god has ever been. He called his most destructive cloud, Samvartika by name, and, feeling like the king of all, stood smartly and proclaimed, "These forest-dwelling bovine tenders, rich and drunk with pride, have let their Krishna cast my rightful sacrifice aside. They're like those fools who try to cross the ocean of distress in leaky boats of mundane quotes, while truth goes unexpressed. These cowherds dare to anger me so they can idolize a foolish boy who talks too much and thinks himself so wise. They think they can ignore me. How their wealth has made them proud. Sambartika, destroy their cows. This cannot be allowed. The wind gods will be helping you rebuke this land of Raj. My elephant, Airavata, will lead the entourage. Together we will smash this village. Then we'll see them bow to he who gives them rain and thus maintains their precious cows. Sambartika, who saturates the very universe, began to rain on Vrindavan until it was immersed. The clouds poured water ceaselessly on Nanda's small domain and frightened all the residents with lightning bolts and rain. Torrential rain in massive columns fell in endless flow. The high ground could no longer be distinguished from the low. The cows began to shiver from the rain and freezing wind. Their hands aloft, Lord Krishna's friends and family cried to him, O Krishna, Krishna, no one is as kind and great as you. Protect our cows from Indra's wrath, and please protect us too. On seeing their distress and reams of storm clouds gone berserk, Lord Krishna knew the blasting wind and hail was Indra's work. Lord Krishna thought, My intervention led this god to send unseasonable rain, fierce wind, and hail to harm my friends. A god like Indra, strong and proud, is prone to such mistakes. I'll help him keep in mind he's here to give and not to take. This god is meant to act in goodness, not from foolish pride. I'll humble him. His ego has grown over-magnified. Since Indra has harassed my friends and brought them to their knees, I'll save them now, for I have vowed to guard my devotees. Lifting Govardhan Hill. And then, just as a child might pluck a mushroom from the lawn, Lord Krishna stretched his youthful hand and lifted Govardhan. O mother, father, friends, he called, take shelter here for now. Be safe beneath this gracious hill, and don't forget your cows. Your rescue from the wind and rain has already been planned. Fear not, for I will safely hold this hill up with my hand. Their minds relieved by Krishna's words, the people all conformed, and with their wagons, cows, and priests, escaped the deadly storm. As Krishna held the hill aloft, the people stared amazed and felt no hunger, sleepiness, or thirst for 7 days. They gazed with fascination at the sight of Nanda's son supporting the gigantic hill and pleasing everyone. King Indra, on the other hand, could not believe his eyes. He said, Our rainfall floods the ground, but then at once it dries. Sambartika, your lightning falls like flowers on that hill. Stop pushing air. Someone down there has greater strength and skill. Lord Krishna saw the tempest stop and sunshine fill the sky. It's over, he informed the men. You'll all be safe and dry. The river has receded. Let us go on with our lives. Go home now with your property, your children, and your wives. Collecting their respective cows and filling up their carts, the people under Govardhan got ready to depart. Soon everybody stepped outside, and then, with strength and grace, the little son of Nanda put the hill back in its place. The residents of Vrindavan, in waves of ecstasy, came up by age and rank to thank the Lord accordingly. Some blessed him, some embraced him, others chose to genuflect. The women gave him yogurt and whole grains to show respect. His father, mother, brother, and stepmother then appeared and hugged Lord Krishna feelingly while shedding happy tears. Completely overwhelmed with bliss, they blessed their darling boy, while denizens of heaven showered flowers out of joy. While drums and song resounded through the heavens high above, the cowherd boys, the Lord's dear friends, surrounded him in love. The boys left Govardhan and let their cows eat grass and roam. The gopis, wrapped in thoughts of Krishna, ambled to their homes. The Puzzled Cowherd Men. The cowherd men, amazed by Krishna, found themselves confused, so they requested their beloved Nanda for his views. They said, Your son lifts mountains and kills demons without fuss. since he is our superior, why does he stay with us? Your son is only 7, yet he has tremendous powers. He picks up hills as elephants might pick up lotus flowers. In fact, when he was just an infant, yet to cut a tooth, he sucked the life from Putana, as time sucks out one's youth. At 3 months, with his toe, he kicked a pushcart to the ground. And then he rode a whirlwind in the air and brought it down. Your toddler Krishna then uprooted 2 Arjuna trees. Can you explain the meaning of your son's activities? He killed the demon Vatsa, masquerading as a calf. He seized the demon Bukka's beak and tore the rogue in half. He spun the giant asses round and hurled them into trees and danced around Kaliya's head with much dexterity. With all the feats and superhuman powers he deploys, how can we think of Krishna as a 7-year-old boy? And Nanda, let us ask you this. Now, why is everyone so caught up in affectionate relations with your son? King Nanda said, my friends, please do not tax your heads. When Gargamuni studied Krishna's horoscope, he said that Krishna would do miracles, and that is what he's done. Let me tell you exactly what he said about my son. Your Krishna has appeared before in many ages past, in white and red and yellow shades and sundry social castes. He was a son of Vasudev, the timeless stars proclaim. So in this lifetime, Vasudev shall also be his name. Your son will gather countless names by his activities. He'll keep your subjects happy and prevent calamities. Lord Vishnu comes when gods have failed and evil floods the earth. And your son is like Vishnu. Serve him well in this new birth. Continued Nanda, I've seen Krishna, ever since that time, behave so much like Vishnu, one might think that he's divine. The cowherd men, enlivened and relieved by what they'd heard, began to worship Krishna with sweet offerings and words. They saw how Indra pelted them with hail as sharp as knives, till Krishna simply lifted Govardhan and saved their lives. The strength and grace and kindness that he showed, as we discussed, is typical of Krishna. Oh, may he be pleased with us. Indra repents. Accompanied by Surabhi, the foremost mother cow, King Indra fell before the Lord in full prostrated bow. The helmet of the King of Heaven, brilliant as the sun, then rose as Indra sang these prayers in praise of Nanda's son. This world is a river of anxiety, stupidity, passion, and false piety. Its currents don't touch you. You're pure and aloof. Your body itself is the absolute truth. No lust, greed, or anger appear within you or cause you to fall or affect what you do. So pure is your purpose. It's well understood. When you punish someone, it's for their own good. My father, my guru, who fully controls all-powerful time, which rebukes fallen souls, you come to refurbish the lost mental health of those who would be God instead of yourself. You chastise this fool. His conceit is now purged. Your boldness awakened my spiritual urge. Engrossed in my power, I made an offense. Forgive me, my Lord, and protect my good sense. You free Mother Earth from the warlords and thieves while serving the welfare of your devotees. You live in each atom and in between, too. O seed of all being, I bow before you. When worship for me was disrupted, I tried to rain on Vrindavan till everyone died. You've broken my plans and you've humbled me, too. So now I have come to surrender to you. Lord Krishna smiled as Indra finished, joined his palms and bowed. Lord Krishna spoke, his voice so deep it rumbled like a cloud. When one becomes too proud, I sometimes show a special grace. I take all of his wealth away and put him in his place. Though I disturbed your sacrifice and caused anxiety, you've learned you cannot make decisions independently. A man intoxicated by his power grows so proud and blind, he does not see me, stick in hand, awaiting just behind. I humbled you to help you, not because I am unkind. I always seek the welfare of the spiritually inclined. O Indra, take your leave now. You may stay as heaven's king. among the gods and goddesses who frolic, dance, and sing. It seems you've learned a lesson now, and if it is applied, you'll do your duty soberly, without so much false pride. The foremost cow, Sarabi, then, surrounded by the herd, began to speak to Krishna with these gentle, humble words. Krishna, Krishna, the mystic king, you're the origin of everything. You're our master. You never fail. Indra hurt us, but you prevailed. Though Indra means the Lord, it said, we want you for our Lord instead. You will care for the cows and priests. All the gods will be very pleased. You have saved us from Indra's wrath. Please consent to the sacred bath, marking you as our sovereign Lord, now that reason has been restored. King Indra, quite embarrassed, heard his relatives and friends persuade him to serve Krishna and to try to make amends. His elephant, Airavata, approached Indra and gave a trunk of sacred Ganga Jal so Krishna could be bathed. Sarabi gave abundant milk to bathe Lord Krishna too, and Krishna smiled and said to them, "Do what you wish to do." The bathing was a coronation, crowning Krishna king of oceans, earth, and heaven, Lord Supreme of everything. The gods above sang out in love and danced through heaven's streets. The cows drenched every part of earth as milk poured from their teats. The rivers flowed with tasty liquids, honey poured from trees, and mountains gave up precious stones in endless quantities. The fruits and roots and vegetables grew ripe and good to eat, while creatures, kind or wicked, all felt satisfied and sweet. The leading gods threw waves of petals, pulled from heaven's flowers, and residents of all the planets sang and danced for hours. Amidst this happy situation, Indra understood Lord Krishna is Almighty God, all-powerful and good. Again he took the Lord's permission, joined his friends, and rode by mystic grace through cosmic space back to the gods' abode. Varuna and beyond. Soon after came Ekadashi, a time to pray and fast. King Indra went to bathe quite late, before the night had passed. In prayerful mood, he entered Jamuna's auspicious waves, without a thought that this was not a proper time to bathe. A servant of Varuna, god of water everywhere, saw Nanda taking bath at night and seized him then and there. This servant knew the law book. Feeling powerful and proud, he said, "To use these waters in the dark is not allowed." The servant took King Nanda to Varuna to be tried. The cowherd men, alarmed when Nanda disappeared, all cried, "O Krishna, Krishna, Nanda hasn't come back from his bath. We fear that he has drowned or somehow caused Varuna's wrath." Lord Krishna ran and jumped into the water to transport himself by mystic power promptly to Varuna's court. Varuna was ecstatic to see Krishna in his lair. He offered his respects and fancy worship, then declared, "My body has fulfilled its purpose. Life is now complete. Material existence dies when one beholds your feet. Obeisances to you, my Lord. Your form is absolute. Illusion orchestrates this world, but you are perfect truth. My foolish servant took your father, lacking common sense. King Nanda sits here on my throne. Forgive our great offense. You love your father deeply, Lord. Return him now, home now, please, and show your causeless mercy. We are all your devotees." Contented with Varuna and his pacifying tone, Lord Krishna took his father and returned him to their home. The relatives were overjoyed to see his safe return, but Nanda was astonished and explained what he had learned. Varuna was so opulent. Indeed, he rules the seas, yet he addressed my son just like a beggar on his knees. Varuna then rebuked his servant who arrested me, directing all his servants to show Krishna courtesy. On hearing these fantastic dealings told in Nanda's words, the cowherd men went home and thought of all that had occurred. When Indra and Varuna bowed to Krishna, they surmised, "Our Krishna must be God himself and live in paradise." Lord Krishna, who knows everything, could very clearly sense the men all long to visit his eternal residence. The people in this world endure much karma, Krishna mused, entrapping them in birth and death and leaving them confused. The common man ignores my strength and my divinity. The residents of Raj ignore them too, but differently. Their love for me illusions them, not pride or nature's modes. And now these loving servants wish to see my own abode. So Krishna took them far away and gave them all the sight of his divine effulgence called the Brahmajyoti light. And then they went beyond that light, the target of the wise, and entered in the regions of the spiritual sky. The atmosphere was like Vrindavan, something they all knew. But Krishna here was worshipped, something they would never do. The Vedic texts personified surrounded Nanda's son and prayed to him incessantly. The cowherd men were stunned. So before Kalandipti is going to make some comments on these chapters, I'd just like to talk about an underlying theme through these pastimes. Anyone pick up on this particular chapter? Okay. Resonance, yes?
Bad pride is, yes,
how Indra was so proud and Varuna was so humble, so how Krishna reciprocated with them differently. But they're getting back to Ankusha's point, throughout these chapters the same theme comes up of the relationship between the cowherd men and Krishna. In the first section, Krishna comes and says, you're doing this sacrifice, why? And then he persuades them all to give it up. And they all accept it, and then they all endure the punishment from Indra and take shelter of Krishna. And after it all happens, they're asking Nanda, what's going on with your son? What is it about your son? He's lifting up mountains, he's killing demons. So they want to know. And so Nanda, who's really heavily covered by Krishna's yogamaya, cannot easily get out of his role as Krishna's father. He says, all I can do is tell you what Garga Muni, the astrologer, said about him. And he then quotes verbatim exactly what Garga Muni said. And then he tells them that he said he's Vishnu, so I guess we have to treat him like Vishnu. And so the cowherd men are all satisfied to hear this. But then immediately they forget it. They can't hold that thought. So after they see Krishna rescue Nanda Maharaj from Varuna, they go home wondering, how is it that he deals with these demigods? Again, they're confused. See, so this recurring confusion is a symptom of yoga maya. They just cannot see Krishna as God. They just can't hold it. They keep going back into seeing him as the little boy, this interesting little boy. So because they have this curiosity, then at the end of this section, Krishna takes them all to his abode. So it's a very strange juxtaposition, you know. But that's the theme going through Indra and Varuna, is the Krishna's relationship with the cowherd men. So here at the end of this chapter, he takes them to the spiritual world. So like Brahma sees the spiritual world in the Brahma Samhita, he begins by discussing how this pastoral atmosphere is so beautiful. Chintamani, Prakara, Sadmashu, Kapavriksha, Laksha, Vriteshu. First thing he sees is the touchstones, the desire-fulfilling trees, and the Sarabi cows, and the milkmaids. So he's talking about all these things. Similarly, when he was bewildered by Lord Krishna and saw all the Vishnu boys we read a few days ago, again, when he bowed his head to the ground and touched Lord Krishna's feet, when he stood up, again he saw Vrindavan. So similarly, when the cowherd men go to the spiritual world, the first thing they see is Vrindavan, something they can totally relate to. So Krishna seems very ecologically minded. You know, he always goes for these very pastoral, rural scenes and shows them to his devotees when they're seeing his abode. So the cowherd men could recognize Vrindavan. But what did they see? They saw the Vedic scriptures personified sitting around Krishna reciting their mantras. They're all singing his praises. And that they could not digest at all. That's something they had never seen or imagined happening. Even though they were just told very recently that Krishna was God, and Krishna just transported them past the Brahmajyoti to the spiritual world. Still they're surprised to see Krishna being worshipped. That's the strength of their conviction that Krishna is just a little boy. Are there any questions or comments on this, Gary? Like just like that, yes. He's giving a bunch of bogus philosophies, actually, just to confuse his father, and also to undermine the rituals of demigod worship. So what, is this the Karma Mimamsa, Krishna Kripa?
Jaimini.
This is Jaimini, which means that work is all that matters, and the demigods are obliged to give rewards based on our work. So it's kind of like the Protestant work ethic in this country. The idea is, if you're poor, you're not right with the Lord. So you should, if you work, if you have a job, and you work hard at it, then your piety is possible. But you have to add to that of faith in the dogma of the church. So hard work and belief is the key to getting religion. It's a very similar kind of idea. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, we know that anything we do for Krishna is very insignificant. So we can work as we can, and we do work as hard as we can for Krishna, all the time knowing that the results are entirely up to him. As he tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, you have a right to do your duty, but not to the fruits. So it's just the activities of bhakti that make us happy. That's what we're all about. That's the difference. Okay, we're not attached to any result as long as Krishna is satisfied. Okay, good. Yes, Zach? Was it a trick played by Varuna? No. It was just his servant's mistake. Do you have any... about the hill eating the prasad. You have that. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. So let's go right to that. There's not much in the Bhagavatam about it. Much more than that. Much, just the hill starts eating. No, that's another place. The one that Prabhupada quoted. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. First of all, I want to say thank you to Kalakant Prabhu for writing such a beautiful poem. By reading which, I feel that I am also the part of Vrindavan and watching all these glorious activities of Lord. So, thank you, Prabhu, for writing such a poem. The points which I found interesting are as follows. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is written that a devotee of Krishna has strong and firm faith in the understanding that if he simply engages in Krishna consciousness and Krishna transcendental loving service, then he is freed from all other obligation, which means that a pure devotee of Lord does not have to perform any of the ritualistic functions enjoined in the Vedas, nor he is required to worship any demigods, because devotee who is engaged fully in the service of the Lord has already fulfilled all Vedic injunctions. The same thing is also written in Bhagavad Gita, that there is no need to worship the demigods for any material advancement. All results derived from worshipping demigods are simply temporary. So those who are less intelligent are interested in temporary results. There are many reasons why Krishna humbly asks from his father about the Indra's sacrifice. The first reason is that Krishna is Sarva Darshana, which means he could see into the future. So he wanted to smash Indra's false pride. He wanted to enjoy the pastime with his loving devotees for 7 days, and he also wanted to initiate a blissful annual festival called Govardhana. And because of all these reasons, he first humbly asked from his father about the Indra's sacrifice. To teach Indra a lesson, he first tried to make Indra angry and by stopping the sacrifice. Now, in order to convince his father and other cowherd men, Krishna spoke the Karma Mimamsa and the Sankhya philosophy. According to Srila Sridhara Swami, there are six main points in this philosophy, which are as follows. First, the karma alone is sufficient to determine one's destination. Second, one's conditioned nature is the supreme controller. Third, the mode of nature are the supreme controller. Fourth, the supreme controller is simply a dependent aspect of karma. Fifth, he is under the control of karma. Sixth, one's occupation is the actual worshipable deity. So by describing the philosophy, Sri Krishna convinced his father and other cowherd men. He also told that Indra is not responsible for our result. So there is no need to perform any sacrifice from him. Instead, he said that we should worship the Govardhan Hill, which provides food, shelter and everything to the Brijvasis. To increase the faith of all the Brijvasis in Govardhan Hill, Krishna appeared in another huge personal form, which was like a second mountain standing atop of Govardhan. By doing this, Krishna convinced the cowherd men that he and Govardhan Hill are identical. For some time, the Brijvasi thought that Krishna is the hill. He also began to eat all the food offered in the sacrifice, just to declare that Govardhan Puja is worship, is as good as worship of him. So Mataji, that's why he eat all the food offered in the sacrifice, just to have a confirmed faith in the Brijvasis that Krishna is the Govardhan Hill himself. Yes, Mataji, he has taken the form of that hill. Yeah, it's just like a Govardhan Hill itself. So Lord Chaitanya also recommended that since Krishna is worshipable, so his land Vrindavan and Govardhan Hill is also worshipable. Prabhupada in his lectures says that devotees therefore collect the small rocks or pebbles from Govardhan Hill and worship them at home because this is as good as deity worship. Within the chapter Devastating Rainfall in Vrindavan, I found these points interesting. Indra got angry when he came to know that sacrifice offered by the cowherd men in Vrindavan was stopped by Krishna. To give challenge to the Lord, he called Samvartaka and ordered him to inundate the whole area of Vrindavan with flood. Samvartaka is the cloud which is needed when to devastate the whole cosmic manifestation. Prabhupada says that Indra, though not a demon, was puffed by his material position. For some time, he thought himself as powerful as Krishna. So he gave challenge to the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that his devotees who are engaged in Krishna consciousness have no need to worship any demigods, even if it is found that demigod has become angry. Krishna gave his devotees all protection and they should completely depend on his mercy. When Brajvasi were unable to find any other source of deliverance, they all approach Govinda to take shelter at his lotus feet. When, upon hearing the cowherd man's prayer, Krishna said that the demigods are my devotees and therefore it is not possible for them to forget my supremacy. I found these lines interesting because I told these lines to my father, who worshipped Lord Ganesha from 30 years, just to tell him that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and Lord Ganesha is the demigod. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote that Sri Krishna picked up Govardhan Hill with his left hand. He described that mountain was touching the clouds. With the umbrella of Giriraj, Krishna blocked the Samvartaka cloud and created a living space in the form of house beneath the mountain. In Hari Vamsa, Sri Krishna himself says, Sri Govardhana can give shelter to all the three worlds. What to speak of simple land of Braja? In Vishnu Purana, it is written that the cowherd men and women are all elated and out of loving affection, they opened their eyes wide by continuously drinking the nectar of the beauty and sweetness of Krishna. The Brajvasi felt no hunger, thirst or fatigue, and Krishna, by seeing the beautiful form of his beloved gopis, also forget about eating, drinking and sleeping for 7 days. So when Brajvasi saw that as a child, Krishna do so many wonderful activities, and he also lifted the Govardhan Hill and he killed so many strong demons when he was a small child, he approached to Nand Maharaj and said that Krishna must be a supreme personality of Godhead. So after hearing, Nand Maharaj said that he described the glories of Krishna, what he had heard from Garg Muni. Anand Maharaj told that Krishna is as good as Narayan, which means Lord Narayan's power had entered into the Krishna, not that Krishna was Narayan. Here it is interesting to note that Maharaja Nand considered his child as a wonderful child, not as a Supreme Lord, though he knew all the wonderful activities of Supreme Lord. For Nand Maharaj, Krishna was the object of compassion, not God. So prayers offered by Indra, the point which I found interesting are, when Krishna saved the inhabitants of Vrindavan by lifting Govardhan hill, the Surbhi cow on the order of Brahma came to assist Indra. Indra met the Lord in a solitary place, and by glorifying the Lord, Indra said, "Though Lord, you are performing your role in this material world, your lordship is never conditioned by the law of material nature." Indra said that the pastime of lifting Govardhan hill will be considered as the Lord's punishment for me. After praying, Indra and Surbhi performed the Lord's Abhishek. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote that initially Indra was not feeling qualified to bathe the Lord, but after getting encouragement from Aditi and other heavenly mothers, Indra felt authorized to bathe Lord. During the Abhishek, the residents of all higher planetary systems such as Gandharva Lok, Vidyadhara Lok, Siddha Lok and Charan Lok all combine and glorify the Lord by chanting his holy name. After Abhishek ceremony, all living entities gave up their natural animosity towards each other and become friends. I also found interesting the three meanings of Govinda. The first meaning of Govinda is to protect the cows. Anyone knows the second and third meaning? The second meaning is Govinda means one who protects or nourishes the devotees by attracting their senses. And the third meaning? The third meaning is that Govinda also means one who enjoys the position of Indra. So, within the chapter releasing Nanda Maharaj from the clutches of Varuna, I found this point interesting. On Ekadashi, when Nanda Maharaj has kept fast for the whole day, and next day means on Devadashi, he went to take a bath in river Yamuna, when the servant of Varun Dev arrested him, because according to astronomical calculation, the time in which Nanda Maharaj was taking bath was considered demonic. When Varuna saw Lord Krishna and Balaram in his court, with great respect he said that, "By seeing you, Lord, my life has become completely successful. Now, no longer I have to take a material body." So when Nanda Maharaj saw this, he got bewildered. First, he got bewildered by seeing Varuna's opulence, and second, by seeing his behavior, that just like a beggar, he is asking for mercy and forgiveness from his child. But then also he did not accept the fact that Varuna worshipped Krishna because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather than he took it as because Krishna is such a wonderful child, that's why he is being respected by Varuna. In Krishna book, Prabhupada writes there that the conditioned soul who successfully practices bhakti yoga goes directly to the spiritual world after giving up this present body. There they become situated in one of the Vaikunth planets. But the inhabitants of Vrindavan are all pure devotees, so their destination after quitting the body is Krishna Lok. They surpass the Vaikunth Lok. Prabhupada also says that the mature devotees who have completely executed Krishna consciousness are immediately transferred to the universe where Krishna is appearing.
Okay, any more discussion, questions? Okay, let's start. Nanda Kumar. Please.
So, Lord Krishna lifted Govardhan hill and Indra was pouring all the rain. So, where the water is going? So, that's the question I will address. So, when Lord Ram was there, Ram and Sita, they were living in forest, and Mother Sita was very desirous to feed sages. So the sages would eat very little, and Sita was complaining that these sages don't have good appetite. I can cook a lot, they are not eating. Then Lord Ram said, "Okay, I'll meet you with a good sage, with good power." So he invites sage Agastya. So when he is eating, he ate for 17 days, and Sita, and then she was tired, and she said, "I want to just stop it now." So then Lord Ram signaled him that stop, stop your game. Then he said, now I want water. And then Lord Ram said, because we are living in forest, we don't have enough water. In the future I'll lift Govardhan, then I'll provide you a lot of water that time. So then till then you just enter the samadhi. So then when all the water, when he lifted Govardhan, so those sage Agastya drank all the water which is coming down from the earth. This I have heard in Chobari temple lectures, and now I just searched on internet and I found that it is there.
Yes, the internet is a highly reliable source for all past. Yeah, yes. Certainly it's the rasa. It does mention in the Bhagavatam that the Indra is complaining the ground is dry. Okay. Ankush.
In here we see like Krishna is saying that we should worship the Govardhan, and like we see some, I guess you can say, impersonalists, but people like who like to worship nature. But you can find the same things in our culture, like people are worshipping like banyan tree, tulsi leaf, tulsi plant. But they are understanding there is a personality behind that rather than just.
Comment. Ollie, would you like to add to that, the religion and nature, nature major? Is he right? Fig tree was actually one of those editing errors from the original. Yeah, it's from the banyan. But he put the sacred fig tree, right? Is that right, Krishna Kripa? Remember that? I think he looked up in the dictionary and found some correlation, so he put fig instead of banyan. Yes. We even planted one out front. I think they're somewhat related, yeah. Okay, Damodar, you had a question.
Are we not supposed to bathe at night?
Are we not supposed to bathe at night? Anyone have any information on this? Not in the river and not in Dwadasi? So in Kali Yuga, if you bathe at all, you're doing well.
Yeah.
Okay. Other comments? Clayton, you had a question.
Deepti had said that the demigods don't forget that they serve Krishna, but that they're not able to forget that. So I'm wondering why Indra acted so pridefully and wanted all the fruits of the cowherd men's labor, because he acted as if he'd forgotten that Krishna was his lord. So could someone clarify that?
It's because whenever someone is pride, Krishna says pride leads to anger, and anger leads to loss of intelligence. So Indra had lost his intelligence. That's why he was acting like that.
Was it Krishna's desire or was it Indra's pride?
It was Indra's pride only. That's a part of the free will, actually. Yeah.
This is very simple point also, in addition to that, that Krishna also wants to establish some principles, and when he wants to do that, he wants to chastise his own men. So just like in India, it's said that the mother-in-law chastises her own daughter to teach a lesson to the daughter-in-law. So they don't talk directly. So Indra is a dear devotee of Lord. So he always picks him as an example to show to others. But he is also responsible, but he also picks his near and dear ones to establish some principles.
Explain that example just a bit. Make sure you understand. When a mother has a son who gets married in India, traditionally the son and daughter-in-law will move in the house for some time while they're getting established. So here's this mother, and of course no woman is ever good enough for any mother's son. You know, so the poor girl is trying to help out, and the mother has all kinds of things, she sees her doing all kinds of things wrong in her kitchen. And so the etiquette is that rather than directly instruct and criticize the daughter-in-law, the mother will have her own daughter in the kitchen and say, you're doing this wrong, and you're doing this wrong. and your mother and the daughter is saying, what's the matter with you? But through... Yes, exactly. So he's incapable in that sense of not recognizing Krishna's supremacy. So that's also true of Lord Brahma and later Lord Shiva throughout the 10th canto. These various deities experience some bewilderment. But this often happens in Krishna's pastimes. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was very wise and realized, but he became confused about his duty before the battle. So this gives Krishna the opportunity to instruct everybody. Very good. Sagar?
I was looking at what on page 166, line number 47-48, where even it said that Garga Muni himself said that Lord Vishnu comes when gods have failed and evil floods the earth. I'm wondering, why this keeps coming again, and the Lord Vishnu comes. Why can't, they say, Supreme Personality of God, Krishna comes? Page 166, line number 51-52.
These are the gopas, I guess.
Well, the question is, why does Garga Muni say Lord Vishnu? Why they keep talking about Vishnu, Vishnu? Why don't they say Krishna? Because they're not pure devotees? Okay, can anyone do a little better?
Is it the Lord Vishnu comes when gods have failed the evil and... I think it's because it's Lord Vishnu's duty is to protect the universe and maintain the universe. So
in other words, Lord Vishnu is actually God, but for the more kind of materialistic people, they will say Vishnu is God more easily than Krishna.
I think they're looking to maintenance of the universe.
Vishnu fits the Judeo-Christian idea of God much better. Doesn't this all-powerful... the origin, the creator, omniscient. Vishnu is just a fraction of Krishna. Krishna's energies, right? But Krishna is a little too personal. So does that answer your question? It's in the mood of awe and reverence, in other words.
Yeah, I was thinking that when Indra attacked the Brijvasis, then Lord Krishna could have stopped him without any effort. But he himself personally picked the help. So he wouldn't do that for materialistic people.
Okay, Krishna personally gets involved with his devotees. Okay, yes, Chaitanya.
Is it true, Kalakanta, that Krishna never leaves Goloka Vrindavan? So is it actually Vishnu, the form that comes out of Goloka to do these pastimes, or that I just remember hearing something. Yeah, when he was talking about that Vasudev on that question Sagar was asking, I think is that true or?
Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, but he leaves Vrindavan in his Vasudev form, right? Yeah, then he's Vasudev. You can't tell the difference.
I think it's Shamsundar Krishna. Oh, but one thing I've heard, whenever Krishna kills the demons, that's actually the Vishnu aspect of Krishna, which is killing the demons.
Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.